We had a memorial service yesterday for Edie Zorn, one of our members, been a member for about 15 years. And the funny thing about memorial services is you hear things about people that you've never heard before. I mean, I've known Edie for 15 years. She had six sisters and one brother. She was the oldest. Does that say something? She was a pretty much, one of her sisters said, "You learned very quickly, Edie is in charge." And I said, if somebody would have told us that when she first came to the church, it would have been easier for us. It took us a little while to figure that out. But it was just kind of cute to hear the stories and things like that. And it always strikes me when we're at memorial services that you hear things and people speak so well of the deceased, and you wonder, why don't they talk about them like that when they're still alive? What we say matters, and words are powerful things. Words have the power to give life, and words have the power to take life, to almost communicate death. That old saying, "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me, or names may never hurt me." That's just baloney, right? So we have three passages that we looked at today, and Tom read two of them. And the first from Isaiah 50 begins with this: "The Lord has given me a tongue." The tongue that we have is a gift from God, and we should use it as such. Okay? My tongue belongs to God. Okay? He owns it. It should be used in ways that honor Him and that communicate His message. Let our mouths speak the words of God. Isaiah goes on to say, "So that I may know how to sustain the weary one with a word." Man, that's great, isn't it? People that are tired, people that are weary, people that feel oppressed, feel exhausted. Just to hear a word of encouragement, a kind word, a word of love, can sustain them, can empower them, can give them new life. Or you can say, get over it. That just deflates, right? It takes it away. But the real lesson today is in James 3, right? That passage is, powerful. The tongue is a fire that can set a forest ablaze. The tongue is like a bridle. If it's unbridled, it can go crazy running all over the place. That passage starts with, "Let not many become teachers," because teachers will be held to a higher standard. That's why we have ordination standards that we have to pass for pastors in the Presbyterian Church. We all stumble, but if the tongue is unbridled, the body goes astray. The tongue is like a rudder that directs the ship. So I don't know if you think about that, but the person up here is kind of like a rudder that directs the ship and helps the ship to go in the direction that God is calling us to go. If the person up here is heading in the wrong direction, the whole ship is going the wrong direction, right? So that's why it's important for us to pay attention. But then James kind of gets more into a universal attitude about the importance of our tongue individually as our own person. How are we speaking? How are we using our tongue? Is it for life or is it for death? We can tame beasts, but who can tame the tongue? I love that. You ever said something and you go, "Oh, darn. Oh, shoot." Sometimes it happens when I'm preaching. I swear, I'll say something and I just go, "That didn't come out right." And it's like I want to reach out and grab it and pull it back in. Not to mention the 9:30 versus 9 o'clock for choir, things like that. But sometimes I say things that just are not right. The tongue is a restless evil full of poison. Ay, ay, ay. Not a good thing. Now, I love the way he gets into this. With it, we bless God. And then we curse human beings that are created in the image of God. How can that be? How can we do that? Can a fountain both produce fresh water and brackish water? I love that word, brackish. Everybody say brackish. 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 What is brackish water? Salt water. Not quite as bad as the ocean, but salty. Very similar to what you might find in the Dead Sea. Brackish water. Can a fig tree produce olives or a vine figs? You've heard you are what you eat. You've heard you are what you wear. James is saying you are what you say. What you say is the kind of person you are. I mean, let's take this. These are words of life. When I speak words of life, that's great. You would take that and drink it, right? It's life-giving water. Now we add a little bit of negative. Anybody wants this? A little bit of negative ruins the whole batch, right? Now, if you're anything like me, I can hear 9 compliments and then 1 criticism, and I'm devastated. If somebody speaks positive words 9 times out of 10 and then speaks negative, it just kind of makes the whole thing untastable, right? Have you ever felt that way, where somebody is talking nice, and then they and they say something and you kind of go, ugh. And it like puts a bad taste in your mouth. That's what James is saying. Make the words that you speak water of life, life-giving. So it's interesting that this is connected to the passage in Mark, the gospel we're reading, right? Because here we have an example of somebody speaking life and somebody speaking death. On one hand, Jesus, you're the Messiah. Now Matthew explains that Jesus says, "Well said, Simon, son of Jonah. Because of this, I will build my church on this, and I will change your name to Petra, to Peter. And upon this I will build my church, and you learned this from God, the Father above." All these good things. He's patting Peter on the back. Good job. The very next passage, Peter's rebuking Jesus. Now, I think he was kind of like, felt a little empowered. Oh, Jesus thinks I'm direct line to God. I'm doing a good job. I'm a little proud. And then he says, "Well, Jesus, you know, I got to correct you on this. You're not doing it right." What does Jesus say? "Get behind me, Satan." Well, that's tough. One moment he's saying, "Upon this rock I will build my church," and the next he's saying, "Get behind me, Satan." So Peter was producing fresh water for a moment, and then for a moment he produced brackish water. And Jesus called him on it. Words can say positive things about people. Words can say negative things. We can say positive things all day, and then at one moment we say a negative thing, and it wrecks everything else that we've said. It's interesting, this past week I was talking to a friend who's a pastor in an urban setting, new church development, the church is growing, she's in a different denomination. And she's a beautiful young woman, 40-ish, that's young to me. And she's got this church, and it's vibrant, and it's growing. And all of a sudden, she started hearing about the church that launched them. Most church plants come out of another church. The church that launched them, the wife of the pastor there had been spreading rumors that she had had work done, which was completely untrue. And so she had to go and talk to this woman and say, "What are you talking about? What are you doing?" And it just reminded me, words can cause such discontent. That's that flame, that little bit of flame that causes a forest fire, right? Gossip and rumors. I mean, I like to call the church God's playground. But gossip
is the devil's playground. The devil just takes it and runs with it. And when we start to say things, gossip, what exactly is gossip? I wrote it down, but I lost my place in my notes, which is not unusual. It's basically, oh, here it is, unconfirmed speculation, and sometimes just out and out lies. But it's oftentimes we hear something and it's just juicy. We have to tell somebody else, even though we haven't confirmed it. So how do we handle gossip? How do we handle rumors? Best thing, keep your mouth shut. My grandmother taught me, probably your grandmother taught you, if you don't have anything good to say, don't say anything at all. I wonder when we lost that in our culture. Yeah. And when did we lose it in the church? Have you ever considered the thought that when you speak negatively about the church, it hurts the church? It hurts the church. So, at the memorial service yesterday and hearing all the great stories about Edie and her being an older sister, a mother of two, her two sons were here, a wife, a friend, all the stories, I got thinking, you know, a while back we did what we called the top five, where we had our oldest five members and we took them upstairs and we kind of had almost a memorial service. We shared things that we loved about them, and because that whole idea of waiting until somebody passes before you tell them how much you love them, it's kind of odd, isn't it? But to be able to do it in person, and that way you don't have any regrets. I wish we had continued that, but it never really got traction, I guess. And so maybe we can restart that again. Just having opportunity to talk to people and let them know how much they mean to you, how much you appreciate them, and tell them to their face rather than tell them to the grave. Rather than say nice things about the person after the death, let's say nice things to the person while they're still alive, right? So here's my challenge for you. Think of three people in your life and write out what you would say about them at their memorial service, and then send it to them in a letter. And you can't pick me. You have to pick three other people. That's my challenge. Speak life to someone. Let the words of God speak to you and through you.